In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Stevens Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be speaking with Martin Stubbs, the lead guitarist in the New York City band The Midnight Callers. Their recent coolest song of the world is New York Tramp, and it's off their brand new album Rattled Humming Heart, available from Gem Records. We'll hear a tad of it now, and afterwards I'll be back to chat with Martin on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage. Fred here with you in Little Stevens Underground Garage, and it is time for today's coolest conversations. Joining me is Martin Stubbs, one of two guitarists in the New York City band The Midnight Callers. Their new album, Rattled Humming Heart, that's available from Gem Records, and it features our coolest song of the world, New York Tramp. How are you, Martin?
Doing great, Manfred. How you doing?
I'm doing excellent and very happy to be chatting with you today. Back when I spoke with your bandmate Chris Payne back in 2020, he told me that you were living in the Bronx. Is that still the case?
That is still the case, yeah. Myself and Marley actually live in the same building, believe it or not.
How long have you been there in the same building?
6 years now, I'd say.
And where are you from originally?
I'm originally from the Philadelphia suburbs, a town called Blue Bell.
And the Philadelphia suburbs, and that's on the Pennsylvania side.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Well, you're the lead guitarist in the Midnight Callers. When did you start playing guitar?
Oh, man. Well, my mom noticed when I was about 11 that I wasn't practicing my violin as much. And so she said, hey, if you keep your practice up in your violin, I'll buy you an electric guitar. And I got it for pretty much my 12th birthday, I think. And I never picked the violin up after that.
That didn't exactly pan out as mom had hoped. But so she had you playing violin. When did you start playing violin?
I want to say when I was in second grade, so probably like 6 or 7 years old. Something like that.
What was this? What was the reason to have you pick up violin?
You know, my parents were both classical musicians. My dad is a classical piano player. My mom's an opera singer. So we kind of always had classical music in the house. And that was, you know, I remember the kids came to class from the older grades and they kind of showed off the cello and the violin and the stuff that you could kind of learn to play through the school. And I don't know, just kind of looked cool to me. That's kind of how I got into it. And then after a certain point, you know, it's like as you get older, you know, my parents were giving me all the classic rock records. And so it was like, you know, you want to emulate your heroes. And so you don't have, you know, too many people playing classical violin on the stage in the 70s rock realm. So that's how.
What about Charlie Daniels? You got to get some Charlie Daniels in there and take the, you know, the devil went down to Georgia. I guess didn't figure very well. Go ahead.
Yeah, Charlie wasn't part of, you know, I had Hendrix and Zeppelin and Queen and Charlie Daniels just wasn't in my sphere at the time.
Ah, man. Yeah. Well, you see, I'm from Georgia. So when the devil went down to Georgia, that was actually getting played on the rock radio in Atlanta. And it didn't get me to pick up the violin, but but otherwise, you know, it was a pretty cool song, I thought, you know. So your mom gives you this guitar and you're going to put the violin down. Well, what type of guitar was it that she got you?
It was an Ibanez, kind of like a knockoff Stratocaster. It was like a candy green Stratocaster. And I had that maybe for, I don't know, a couple of years. And then she eventually wound up getting me a Tele, which I still have.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So the Tele's not going anywhere. It's got a soft place in my heart, even though I now mostly play Les Pauls or other things with humbuckers in them.
Well, you spoke about, you know, wanting to emulate your heroes. What was there any moment, one moment where you thought, going forward, I need to be rocking from here on out?
Probably. I mean, I remember when I was pretty young, the first batch of records that my mom gave me, she figured I was old enough. She gave me Zeppelin 2 and 4. I want to say Band of Gypsies with Hendrix, and it was like a Who Greatest Hits compilation. And so I kind of fell in love with, you know, the combination, right, of like Townsend, Hendrix, and Jimmy Page. And then I think that's probably what really got me into like lead stuff originally. But being a kid of the, you know, of the late 90s, early aughts, I then wound up, you know, loving Weezer and Nirvana and some of those more like, you know, 90s bands, grungier bands. And so I actually started playing more grunge stuff. But then as I got better, I realized I could play the classics that I fell in love with originally. And that's kind of how I got into playing lead guitar. You know, Jimmy Page, sort of, I had a DVD, The Song Remains the Same, and just, you know, he has the solo and Since I've Been Loving You that's just like mesmerizing. And that was it. I was like, man, I gotta play that. I gotta know how to play that. And that's kind of where my journey started with playing lead.
Well, I remember Chris talking about how he and your drummer, Julian Bedrino, had been in an earlier band together, a mod sort of sounding thing is how he had described it. And after that fell apart, they brought you and your bass player, Marley Mirinthopoulos, on board. What is your recollection of how you guys came together, how the Midnight Callers formed?
You know, funny story, if you talk to musicians and, you know, people who've joined bands over the last 15 years or so, Craigslist almost always comes up, right? And it's like, wait, what? You meet people on Craigslist? And it's actually, you'd be surprised, number of bands. I mean, you know, you get a lot of hacks on there, but Chris put out a Craigslist ad. And you read enough of them and you kind of get to know what people are going to be jerks and what people are serious and whatnot. And he mentioned Big Star in his like list of influences, which for me, right, like Big Star, the number of people who I've ever spoken with over the years who either weren't songwriters or weren't just total music junkies, like that's where Big Star kind of exists. And so that was kind of my prompt, like, oh, you know, me and this guy could have some stuff in common. And I hit him up and I think I went out and I auditioned and, you know, that was kind of it from there. Marley came in. I think he was a similar, actually, I think he might've been Craigslist too, but we actually tried out a couple of people and Marley just came in. I mean, the dude's technical chops are crazy. So he just comes in and just destroys, you know, the first four songs that we gave him, he just kind of knocked them right out of the park. It was like, there wasn't even a new person in the room. So, that's kind of how he joined.
And so you and Marley, you really didn't meet Chris and Julian until you had auditioned.
at your audition.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he actually wound up. So he's been in the building the last 1 or 2 years, but that's after he joined the band. So he was living in another place across the Bronx when he joined the band. And I didn't know him until he kind of joined on.
Well, you know, so the dynamics of bands and stuff and you know, it's hard to find the right, not only people that are talented in the right ways, but also just personality wise. I mean, you must feel pretty lucky to have, you know, a bunch of guys that you can get along with.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty almost impossible ask if you think about it all the way down, where, you know, if you look at any successful band, there's some combination of people who have a lot of hustle, a lot of love and passion for music, a lot of, you know, talent. And then, you know, they have to be able to like hang out together, especially if you're touring, and not, you know, tear each other up. And I think you think about, it's kind of like the game of chance, the cosmic game of chance with music. It is kind of crazy how, you know, how bands come together and then stay together, especially with songwriting and all of the things that happen with bands once they get to like a different level. Like they, you know, they kind of get to the next stage, then it kind of becomes its own little business, and you sort of have that aspect of it too. So yeah, we're definitely very, very lucky to have the composition that we have. I feel like we've got a good blend, and you know, you kind of have that good mixture of people who want to show up, play well, work hard, but are also like, look, at the end of the day, you know, we're in this because we love what we do, and yet that has to come first.
If I recall correctly, the last album was recorded at Chris's parents' house in Boston.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So the new one, though, you did Holy at Kurt Ryle's House of Vibes in Highland Park, New Jersey. You did the whole thing there this time?
We did, yeah. Yeah, we only did the vocals on the first one with Kurt. And so, yeah, we, you know, the kind of like band on a budget, and we had, you know, I wouldn't say we had good gear, but we had gear, you know, we had a little console, we had decent microphones, we had, you know, Logic on our computers, and we did what we did with what we had. And then by the, you know, Chris, I think, knew Kurt from either his last band or from a connection that he was in. And, you know, we knew we couldn't do the vocals by ourselves. I mean, you know, vocals are like one of the hardest things to get really right on a record. And so that's where, you know, Kurt came into play, and he kind of, you know, helped us shape the vocals, shape the harmonies. And then, so we had that run with him with the first record. And the second time we were like, no, we're doing this in a studio. Like we have, you know, we'd been like carefully crafting, you know, the majority of the songs on the record, and we had well-formed demos, and it was like, no, we're going to come in, we're going to, you know, invest in the studio time. And I think there's a huge sonic expansion happening on the new record, simply because there's someone who knows what the hell he's doing recording your guitar amps and your vocals. And I mean, the drums were the biggest difference, right? Because Kurt himself is a drummer. So it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, so that first album was Red Letter Glow. And so now you're working with Kurt on the new one there, the House of Vibes. Was there you're doing the whole process with him this time? Was there anything that he did that you thought, wow, that's an unexpected idea or way of doing things?
I think, you know, we had a lot of the tracks. I mean, you know, I would say 5 or 6 of the tracks on the record we had kind of written and arranged, I wouldn't say entirely, but, you know, getting pretty close to like 80, 90%. And so, yeah, you know, when we came to him, we had these kind of well-formed demos. And a big thing about that was paring down the songs into like, what are the moments of interest that need to pop through, and how do we make them pop through? So it's the difference of like, okay, you're not going to use a Les Paul here, you're going to use a Telecaster here. And it's those little things that he hears that we don't, that kind of pull the important personality pieces of each of the songs out in the mix. And I think, you know, me, I'm not as talented as he is by any stretch, but I'm a bit of a studio dork myself. And just seeing him work in that way was really cool.
So the new album is Rattled Humming Heart, out now on Gem Records. Features our coolest song in the world this week, New York Tramp. About that song, do you recall how that one came together?
Yeah, so I had a very close friend of mine pass away over the pandemic, and kind of as I was, you know, as when that happens for anyone who's experiencing it, you kind of have these range of emotions. You sort of want to mourn, but you also don't want to lose sight of celebrating the beautiful life that somebody had. And so I wanted a celebration song. And my buddy was just, he was like the epitome of New York, right? If you listen to the Velvet Underground, if you listen to Iggy and the Stooges, I know they're from Detroit, but when that time that Iggy was hanging in the East Village, when you listen to that, Television, Blondie, that East Village, New York City scene, it's like this guy kind of embodied it, right? He was kind of always ready to go out, always ready to party. And so originally I had this demo that was a little more like Stonesy. I mean, I had the riff that you hear on the song pretty quickly, but the tempo of it was different. And we kind of hacked around with it for a little bit at practice. And we had a vibe, but then I kind of took it back and was like, it's not capturing the energy, the sort of rambunctious nature of my friend. And I forget what I was listening to or what sparked it, but there was a rhythm change, which is the kind of tempo that you hear now. With a more driving drum beat. And that's kind of, I remember sending a demo of that to Chris and we were like, all right, yep, this is definitely it. And then we kind of worked the rest of it from there.
Well, very cool. So was there any extra tweaking that Kurt added to this one or not?
I think Kurt's primary thing was that we had it's technically in the mix, but we had this idea for an organ. This is one of the first times that we actually put organ or just keys on the record. We worked with Chris Rogers from Chris Rogers and the Dirty Gems, and Kurt was like, nah guys, this is the guitar track. Like, I'm not gonna say no on the organs, but this is a guitar track. And so that's really what you hear, is like the guitars are really slammed to the front of the mix with this one. And I think that was kind of his little, the Kurt Ryle kind of polish that he puts on things, able to hear that magic and pull it out.
Now, did you guys make a video for New York Tramp?
We did. Yeah. We actually, our video is going to be premiering, Thursday this week. So that'll be up on our socials. And, we spent about a weekend filming it in the city, kind of capturing each of the band members, we all come from different places, so that's kind of the angle, right? Like, we've never really introduced ourselves as the Midnight Callers, and so the video kind of shows us in our own elements and then coming together in Midtown to play the song at our practice space.
Another cool track in the album is What Goes Around, and it starts off with these backing vocals. You're talking about the importance of vocals. It starts off with these backing vocals, a bunch of oohs and it sort of helps build this momentum in the front end of the song. Whose idea for that? Whose idea was that?
That's a good question. That was one of the songs that Chris came to practice with pretty well formed, and it had he was hearing kind of a Kinks meets the Stooges, vibe. And I remember Marty telling me at one point years ago that you guys are when people hear you, they hear your harmonies and they hear your guitar riffs and they hear your hooks. And so he had the hooks and he had the guitar riffs, but there weren't a ton of harmonies in it. And so we kind of built this whole, I think I came to practice with the idea of building this whole build, this build up to it in the beginning. And then that big, part kind of slams in with the ahs. But that, you could probably thank Marty for that one, because he kind of drilled that into my
And when we say, we're talking about the bass player here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Marty Scott. He's our he's the head of Gem Records. He was the one who kind of told us what, he was like, when people hear your sound, it's these three things. And so hearing the original demo and then adding the ooze in was kind of me channeling Marty into okay, this song is almost there. What does it not have? That kind of build was it.
Well, mentioned the guitars, right? So a lot of ringing guitars and power chords, and And that makes the another track, Maggie, really stand out even more because it's centered around acoustic guitars. What's the story with the track Maggie?
Maggie, it's funny. So, you know, you mentioned New York tramp. Maggie's the kind of mourning of that person, right? You have the celebration and you have the mourning. And we wanted, you know, I kind of wanted the inverse of that. And we knew we wanted something that was pretty simple on the instrumentation, 12 string acoustic, regular acoustic, and we have some other kind of flares in there. But that one was really a later addition to the album. Chris and I kind of pulled that together over a couple of demos, and then Kurt really helped us kind of finish the final arrangement. That was a song where we weren't really sure if, you know, it matched kind of the rest of the album, but, you know, it was fun to kind of experiment with it. We don't typically write slower songs. I think that's something, you know, we might do more of in the future, but it's a little outside of our comfort zone. So,
Oh, it's very cool. I mean, I appreciated the, you know, the sounds and stuff as a contrast to everything else too.
Yeah. We like to have variety. I mean, our favorite albums, one of the things that I don't always love about, you know, more like modern records is like, you almost get the sense that like someone's telling the band that like, this is your thing and do just that. Right. And so you get a record that's kind of all loud guitars and one way or the other. And then if I go back and listen to my favorite records from like, you know, think about like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, right. Or like Spiders from Mars, right. Ziggy Stardust and Spiders from Mars. They have such a variety of tones and composition, and it's really, you know, the Beatles are the same way, Zeppelin's the same way, like flexing their you know, different avenues of their songwriting abilities. And that's kind of, Chris and I are always, we always kind of have that in mind when we're writing and when we're pulling together what we think are going to be a good, you know, collection of songs for a record.
Well, I saw that you had a gig last week in Massachusetts in Hull. Do you have any other shows upcoming?
Yeah, we do. So we are playing at Roscoe Brewery. That's going to be in late July. I want to say it's the 22nd. Marley's going to throw something at me if I get the dates wrong. He does all the booking. So we'll be at the Roscoe Brewery in July. We're going to be playing with the Anderson Council in August at Drew's Place. We got a bunch of shows coming up after that at various casinos. So another gig at Roscoe, Plain Ridge Park Casino in November. We're going to be back at Twin River Casino. We've got a pretty stacked schedule up and down the East Coast for the next 6 months.
Well, that's very cool. So the one that's coming up in July, did you say that was the next one? Is that Roscoe's?
Yep, Roscoe. Roscoe.
Where is that? Where is Roscoe's?
So, that's kind of funny that it's in the town of Roscoe, New York. And when the first record came out, I don't know who got the idea. But it was like, hey, we should hit up Roscoe Brewery and see if they'll host us. Tell them we got the single out on Underground Garage. It's about 41 miles to Roscoe. And so we did that first gig with them years ago. And we've been back there once or twice a year for the last 3 or 4 years. And it's just, it's fun. They're almost like family to us now. Like we go out there, they have this, they actually converted an old school bus into a stage. So we play on an old school bus, and it's just fun. We really look forward to going back up and playing for those guys.
So you say you play on an old school bus. I mean, the sides of the bus are, it's like playing on a flatbed trailer or how do you mean?
Yeah, kind of. So if you picture like, Julian sits like in the bus itself, so the drums are kind of back, and then they've built it so that the whole one side of the bus is the stage, and it folds down, and so it creates a platform that kind of expands out, and me, Marley, and Chris are on the platform, and then Julian's kind of tucked back a bit.
That is way cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's super fun. You know, the whole stage is kind of bouncing as we're playing, so it's definitely a bit of a logistical challenge at times, but it's a good time, and it's a good crowd, so we enjoy going up there, and it's a beautiful part of the state too, so that helps.
So we can take a listen to one more track off the new album, off of Rattled Humming Heart. And I'd like us to take a listen to Girl on the Run. So what can you tell us about Girl on the Run?
Girl on the Run was, we finished the arrangement for Girl on the Run with Kurt in the studio. Chris had, that was, you know, you kind of have three ways that our tracks come together. Either Chris comes with a thing that's 80% finished. I come to a practice with something that's 80% finished, or we have bits of things that we stitch together. And he had that opening riff. He mm-hmm. had, I think he had he and I worked out the verse, and then Marley was the one who came in and like slammed in with the chorus at the end. But we had kind of like a, you know, intro verse chorus, and then not a ton past that. And so we actually spent like half a day in the studio recording different versions over and over and over again. And Kurt heard the different versions and helped us piece together what is the kind of final, the final result that you hear now. So, that one, that's actually, it's funny. You go into a recording process thinking you're like, I don't know how I feel about that song, or these are going to be my favorites. And for me personally, that's one of my favorite songs on the record. I just love the way it came together. I love how it sounds. It's kind of, you know, happy surprises there.
Well, you know, that's just one of those truisms too. At the same time, there's some songs you go into the studio with thinking this is the hit, baby. This is a hit. And then when it's done afterwards, you're like, it's okay. It turned out all right, I guess. But then there's these other songs that all of a sudden it's like, wow, man, did we polish that turd great? You know, I can't believe that sounds that good. Well, Martin, thank you so much for talking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me, Manfred. Pleasure's all mine.
Well, we're going to give a listen now to Girl on the Run. Here's the Midnight Callers off Rattled Humming Heart in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Some of Girl on the Run. That's the Midnight Callers here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Track is from their latest album, Rattled Humming Heart, out on Gem Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Martin Stubbs for speaking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Guitar slinger Steve Conti is a favorite of ours here in the Underground Garage, and he has a new single out now on Wicked Cool Records called 4th of July. He'll be my guest next time around, and he'll tell us all about it on Your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.